Okay. I want to share with you an interesting idea that I had concerning this this Sedra. The Sedra starts with the command to build the Mishkan that Moshe was given by God. Now, if you had a project, right, like building the Mishkan, and you had to present it, so it would seem that the proper way to present it is, we have this project of building the Mishkan. In order to do that, we need the following materials. That should seem to be the way that it would be presented. So why does the Torah present it just the opposite? God tells Moshe, V'yikhuli truma. Go speak to the Jewish people and tell them we need donations, contributions, materials. Zohav, kesef, nechoshes, gold and silver and the copper and so on. And then, now that we have these materials, v'asuli mikdash, make a mikdash from it. It seems to be inverted. You don't go to people and say, hey, we need materials. For what? Don't bother me with the details right now, just we need materials. And then tell them that there's a purpose for those materials of building a Mishkan. Tell them first what the purpose is. We want to build a Mishkan, and therefore we need materials. There's another place in the Torah where we find the same question. Follow. It says, Vayihi kol ha'aretz sofa echos u'dvorim achadim. Way back, towards after the it's in Noah, the end of Parshas Noah. The whole world was one language and common ideas. Vayihi b'nosam ikedem, when they traveled from the east, vayimtsu bika v'eret Shinar, they found a valley in the land of Shinar, and they settled there. Vayomru, and then they said to each other, Ishar re'eyu, hova nilben olavenim, let's make bricks. V'nisra falasreifa, and let's make mortar. And burn them in fire. Vatehi lohem halaveina lo'oven, and the bricks became like stone. Vachemer hayolohem lachomer. Right, and the bitumen served them as mortar. That's what it says here. Okay, so they just got this whim. Hey, let's make some bricks. Then, next pasuk, Vayomru, and then they said to each other, Hova nivna lanuir, let's build a city, umigdol, and a tower. Verosho b'shamayim, whose head will be in the heavens. V'nasa lanu shame, will make for us ourselves a name, penoputs apnekos, lest we be scattered over the earth. Let's just hone in on this one point. This sounds absurd. People get together and they say, hey, let's make some bricks. Doesn't sound like they have any reason to have them. We'll make bricks. Then they have all these bricks. They say, hey, we got all these bricks. Let's build a city and a tower. It should have happened the other way. We want to build a city and a tower. For that, we need bricks. So first should have come the project and then the materials. You don't just give an idea, make materials, and once you have materials, let's do something with it. It's the same exact thing with the Mishkan. First, the Rabbanu Shel Olam says, give me materials, then he tells them what the project is. Instead of what we normal, here's the project, for that we need materials. So I was thinking to explain it and also to contrast these two things. There's a tremendous connection in contrast between the Mishkan and the Tower of Babel. First of all, let's start with this. It's impossible to build a place in this world that will contain God's presence. It seems to be, on the surface, an oxymoron, because God is everywhere. So how can God be contained within the walls of a Mishkan? And Moshe Rabbeinu was troubled with this. When he was told the mitzvah of make me a Mishkan, he said, the world, the universe can't contain you. How are you going to be contained within a small building? And the Rabbanu Shel Olam said, I'm not asking you to do it according to my parameters, but according to your ability. We'll see in 1 second what that means. And therefore, to imagine that you can build a place where God's presence can devolve, right, in that place is absurd. What do you have to do? What you have to do is first sanctify all the material things in this world and raise them up l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven. And that means V'shem Hashem, for the name of God, God's name is another description of the Torah. The Torah is a combination of various names of God, which means the names of God are His attributes, and it means what the Torah is. The Torah is the guide of when God created this world, what was His intention? Where's God's imprint on the world? What are the names, the attributes, with which God created the world, and that is the essence of everything in the world. So the Torah directs you how to use everything in the world properly. The Torah is the blueprint for creation, because God created the world through the Torah. So when you do things l'shem shamayim, l'shem Hashem, you're doing them basically to fulfill the goal, the purpose that God had in creating those things. So you're basically elevating them in service of God, in fulfilling His will. That's what L'shem Hashem means. And that's why it says, the Yikhuli Truma. Right? Take me, the Yikhuli. The Medrash comments that when God gave us the Torah, He came along with it. And where is He situated? In the Mishkan. He came along with the Torah, meaning that you can't separate God from the Torah. The whole idea of the Torah is to reveal to you God's will in everything in creation and to use it to fulfill that will. Therefore, the first stage of bringing God's presence into this world is not building a place and then God's going to go in there. It's taking the world, all the materials, and elevating them in service of God for His name, the Yikhuli Truma, take me, and elevate the physical world to my name, L'shem Shamayim, and then when you have the materials that are elevated and sanctified for God's name, then you're bringing God's presence into this world. And then God can what's it called, occupy the Mishkan. So it's not build a place and then God will be there and we need materials. No. It's sanctifying the materials itself that brings a connection between this world and God, and the Mela, what you build from those materials, God's presence will be there. That automatically will be a Mishkan. And that's why it's called a Mikdash and a Mishkan. But here it's called a Mikdash first. V'asuli Mikdash. You make a place that sanctifies the Shachanti, and then I will occupy that place. Wherever you sanctify, that's where you take these things and offer them to my name and sanctify them, then you're bringing my presence into this world. You can't make a place and expect me to fill the place. But if you bring my presence into the materials, then what you build from those materials, my presence will be there. Now let's see the contrast. What was Migdal Bavel? What did they want to do with Migdal Bavel? Instead of bringing God's presence down into this world, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the heavens and brought Kibiyachol, the Torah, and God's presence down into this world. What did they want to do by Migdal Bavel? Climb up into the heavens and keep God's presence out of this world. Just the opposite. They wanted to compete with God up there and keep God out of things down here. They wanted to separate God from the world, right, and take over. And take over the heavens, too. And therefore, what did they say? They say, let's go and we'll make ourselves a name. Instead of doing it for God's name, we're going to make ourselves a name. The contrast, the antithesis of what the Mishkan was. The Mishkan is bringing God's presence from above down here, and they wanted to go up there and remove God's presence from the world and God's influence and connection, and they wanted to make themselves a name instead of dedicating the world to the name of God. Mamish, the antithesis. Now I found a fantastic Zohar. The Zohar says, what did they actually want to do? What was this city and tower? It says they wanted to build a shul, which is like a small temple, and a Beis Medrash. What? Yeah, bubble. A shul and a Beis Medrash with a Sefer Torah, but not for God's sake, for their own sake. A shul is not like a Mishkan. Only instead of a Mishkan that was L'shem Shamayim, for God's name, right, V'asu li mikdash, l'shmi, to my name, they wanted to do it for their own name. V'nasa lanu shem. Okay?
How could Torah, when they haven't received...
No, it means the concept of all these laws that God made to direct the world, they wanted to be the ones in direction. They wanted to be in charge. So they wanted to take the sacred Torah and the Beis HaKnesses and the Beis HaMedrash, all the learning and everything, and to do it our way. And take it over. Okay, could be. Yes, that's what they wanted to do. So, now God's will is that man should occupy the earth, right? Pru urvu umilu es haaretz, occupy, fill up the earth. People should live everywhere and sanctify the world towards God. That was God's intention, that people should perfect the world, but do it according to what the Torah tells you how to do it, and to elevate the world, either with the seven mitzvahs of Noah or the 613 mitzvahs that we have, to elevate the world and perfect it physically, whatever, in God's, for God's sake, or according to God's will. Okay? And that is what it says, HaShamayim Shamayim Lashem, God has the heavens, He makes the directions from above, but He gave, V'haaretz Nosan L'vnei Adam, but He gave the earth to human beings to conquer, to perfect, but and that's what it says, Asher Bara Elohim, God created, La'asos, that man should continue and complete and perfect that creation. But man has to take his cue from the Ribono Shel Olam. And what God decrees in heaven is what man does on earth within the framework that God creates. So if you take the world and you sanctify it, L'shem Hashem, for the name of God, meaning according to the laws of the Torah and the directives of the Torah and the purpose of the Torah, then you will bring God's presence into this world. That's the goal. What did they want to do? They wanted not to fill up the world. They wanted to gather together in one place. They didn't want to spread out over the whole world. We're interested more in conquering God than conquering the world. So we want to be together and use that togetherness to build this tower and this city, which is similar to building a Mishkan, because you have the holy city of Yerushalayim, which is Keneged, the upper city, and that city comes down and occupies here. And they wanted to do the opposite. They wanted to build a city in order to be able to go up and push God out of the world and take over. Take over the heavens, and then they'll take over the earth too, but not by using the world and spreading out and using it according to God's directive, but taking over the world from above. That was mamish the opposite of the Mishkan, mamish the antithesis. Now, so how do you break yourself away from God? We said the way that you attach yourself to God is by sanctifying everything and realizing that everything was created for the service of God and utilizing for that purpose. And that's the truma. You elevate it, you dedicate it in service of God's name, and once you have the materials dedicated and designated and sanctified, then God's presence, devolves upon them. How do you do the opposite? You take over and decide to disconnect God from the world. How? Till then, what did they build with? Stone. Stone is God's creation. Right? Stone is God's doing. Okay? And they wanted to replace God's doing with their own doing. So what do? You make bricks. Bricks is not stone. Bricks are man-made. So that's what they said. Their first idea is we want to separate ourselves from God. We want to separate God from the physical world. How do we do that? By making artificial things. We're not going to use God's stone. We're going to make our own bricks. So the first intention, just like by the Mishkan, it starts with how you sanctify the materials. By Migdal Bavel, it's how you distort the materials. We're not going to use stone. We're going to make bricks, and the bricks is going to take the place of the stone. The bricks is going to become the stone. And that's how we're going to build this tower, by initially disconnecting God from the physical world, by replacing stone with bricks. And it's interesting that what was the foundation of the Mishkan, right? Because there was no stone in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was built with wood, right, and gold and silver and so on. But the foundation of the Mishkan was stone. What was it? The Luchos HaEvan. What did the whole Mishkan rest on? What was the main part? The tablets of stone with the Torah on it. And they're stone. Right? Which shows that this is what God, the Evan, God is called the Tzur, the rock of the world. Because that represents God's creation of the world, the initial stone that God created the world itself as a stone. So God is called the Tzur. He is the rock of the world. And therefore the Luchos HaEvan, the tablets of stone, were the very foundation of the whole Mishkan and the whole nexus of the entire Mishkan. And therefore, the last material, which was like the building up to the crescendo, what was the last materials that were given? Avnei Shoham va'Avnei Meluim. The stones of Shoham and the stones that were used to fill the Choshen and the Ephod as a remembrance of the Jewish people that the Kohen Gadol carried with him. So the ultimate of the Mishkan was the stones. The stones that the Luchos were carved on and the stones that the names of the Jewish people were carved on. Everything is embedded in that stone in God's creation, not in man's, what's it called, innovations. So the foundation is God, the Torah, and the foundation is the names of the Jewish people on stone. Okay? And they wanted to, what's it called, to replace stone with bricks. And it's interesting, another connection, who was the one? It says, Vayomru Ishal Achiv, one nation said to the other, which nation initiated this? Says the Medrash, Mitzrayim. Okay. Egypt, right, the Migdal Bavel. Mitzrayim, Vayomru Ishal Achiv, Mitzrayim, Talud, and that's how it went. So Mitzrayim were the initiators. That means Mitzrayim was that initial nation that wanted to detach God from the world and do their thing. They wanted to be in control. And that's what Mitzrayim was. Mitzrayim had their magic or whatever, and they felt they can control nature, and they said, God has nothing to do over here. Who's God? We control this world. So Mitzrayim was the ones who suggested Migdal Bavel. And the Mishkan was the last stage in Yitzias Mitzrayim, in totally separating ourselves from Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the concept of, we'll do it. God has nothing to do with this world. We detached him. We control. And the Mishkan is bowing to God's control, bringing God's, not only God up there, we're bringing him down here and dwelling amongst us, totally attaching ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's why the donation of the materials is called the Malacha. We learned some of the Malachos of Shabbos, specifically carrying from the Truma Samishkan, when they brought the donation. L'chora, that wasn't work. The work, the erection of the Mishkan started when they started using the materials. But the way we're saying, no. The actual donation of the materials was the beginning of building the Mishkan. Because if you couldn't donate, sanctify, designate those materials properly, you could never build a Mishkan. You could build a place. God's presence is going to be there. God's presence has to be built from materials that are designated for God, where godliness devolves on them. So you make them l'shem Hashem. Then when you build with materials that are designated for God, God's presence will be there. You can't build a building and expect God's presence to come there. It doesn't work like that. Just like by Migdal Bavel, they couldn't detach God by something they built unless they detached him from the materials. So they had to start with materials that detach God, bricks in place of stone, instead of the Mishkan, who everything devolves on that stone. Okay. Now, let's carry this idea a little further and explain another medrash that has to do with the Mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to be dynamic, okay? And that we should initiate God's will in this world. He wants us to be like that. He gave us that power, that in this world, we are the ones who do, according to his direction and directives, right, within the framework the Torah gave us. But we're extremely dynamic. In fact, to the point where God shadows us. God's called a shadow. Hashem tzilcha al yad yaminecha. God is your shadow on your right hand side. And the Mefarshim explain, the Nefesh HaChaim, the Baal Shem Tov, can't get more universal than that, right? That's both Chassidim and Mishnagdim. Everybody agrees that what it means, right? What it means, Nefesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Veloshener, says, what does that mean, Hashem Tzilcha? That God mimics us. Just like the shade follows the lead of the thing that it is the shade of, so too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mimics us. What we do the lead, God follows. He makes His will fit how we are in this world. He wants us to initiate His will. We say that all the time. Yehi ratzon lufanecha. We're telling God what His will should be. Ratzon yirei av yaseh. God does the will of those that fear Him. As long as you're within the framework, we're the ones who initiate that will. And that's what it means, that God is the shadow of man. However, there's a condition for that. There's another pasuk that speaks about God being the shadow, and that is v'tzel yoshei v'seser elyon, the elyon, God who is the power of all powers, everything emanates from Him. In other words, He calls the shots. He's the elyon. He's the top. Yoshei v'seser. He dwells in mystery and hidden. B'tzel, and in the shadow, Shaddai Yislonan. The Ribbono Shel Olam, known as Shakai, resides in that shadow. Now, when God is the shadow of human beings, that's only as Shakai. Shakai means Sha'omar La'olam Odai. God set the parameters of this world. He told the world where to stop, what the parameters are, what the framework is. Within the framework that God, who is the ultimate top power, right? He calls all the shots. He makes the framework. Within that framework, God subordinates Himself to man's will and becomes His shadow.
So the Shakai aspect of
right,
being resides
right,
in the shadow.
Right. So in the shadow, you need first to know God as Shakai. He sets the parameters. He sets the limits. And then God functions as Tzel. Then He's your shadow. But He does not your shadow if you're outside the limits, if you're outside framework. Mm-hmm. He's the shadow within that framework. And that is the idea of the environs of the Mishkan. The actual courtyard of the Mishkan, the actual plant of the Mishkan, those are the framework. Within that framework, you can be very dynamic. What's in that framework? All the kelim. The shulchan and the menorah that we light and we put the bread on and we make the incense and we make the sacrifices, but they're all within the framework of the Mishkan. So the framework of the Mishkan represents God's parameters that He creates, the limits that He makes, for man, from within which man can function, and the kelim of the Mishkan represent the functioning of man, where God becomes subordinate and takes the lead, like the shadow, from man's what's it called, dynamism. Okay, that you understand that?
No, I don't understand the kelim.
The kelim are what we use. We use the kelim. We light the menorah, and that spreads the light of Torah. We put the bread on the shulchan, and with that we initiate God's will to bring parnasa to the world. But we're the ones who are the initiators. We're the dynamic people using the kelim. But we use them within the framework that the Ribbono Shel Olam created. First you need that framework. Then you can make God into the shadow. Now, in order for Bezalel to be able to build the Mishkan, which is this purpose, first you have to realize you're bringing God's presence into this world, and then you will initiate God's will in this world. Okay? But first you have to sanctify the materials, build the framework, and then use the kelim. That has to be the order. Okay? And Bezalel, who built this, had to understand that. Because if he would build it with any other intention, where man's dynamism is not subordinate to God's, what's it called, God's parameters and God's limitations, then the Mishkan would have turned into Migdal Bavel. Mm-hmm. Then it's replacing God. It's not serving God. It's the same shul, Beis Medrash, Sefer Torah, where man is the focus, where man is making a name for himself and not subordinating himself to God's name. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was given a command. Okay, let me tell you a Gemara first, and then we'll see what I'm explaining before I explain it to you. The Gemara says like this: when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to build the Mishkan, he told him first build the Mishkan, the plant, and then the Kelim, then the various vessels. Moshe went and turned it around and told Bezalel the opposite. First make the Kelim, and then the Mishkan. And Bezalel said, that can't be. It's not the way of the world. If I build the Kelim before the Mishkan, where am I going to put them? Must be that God told you the other way. And Moshe said, you're right. Bezalel Kel, you were in the shadow of God, and you knew. And that's why he's called Bezalel. Very difficult Gemara. First of all, why in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu change what God told him? If he made a mistake, that's impossible to even think of. If he did it on purpose, why in the world would he do such a thing to deceive Bezalel? Why would he do that? Right? To test him, why did he do it? And beyond that, what's this Bezalel? You were the shadow of God. Right? If it's talking about you knew better than I did, to me it was obscure, but you knew it should have been light opposite shadow. I was in the shadow. Shadow is a shadow of a doubt. Light is clear as the sun, clear as light. So you should have been called the oracle. Mm-hmm. Light, not Bezalel. What's the shadow have to do with it? According to what we said, I want to explain this Gemara in the following way. God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Re'ei karasi b'shem Bezalel. Look. Look over here means contemplate. Think. I want you to really think it out and understand why I made Bezalel the architect of the Mishkan and why I called him Bezalel. Because only he will be able to put this Mishkan together. It said he knew how to make the letters that God created the world. That was God's name, right? He knew those names, how to put the world together. Okay? But I want God told Moshe, I want you to understand that. I want you to see that his name fits him. So Moshe had to test Bezalel to get to see. That's what he was told. Re'eh. He wasn't told, I called Bezalel. I want you to understand why I called him Bezalel, right? Why he was called Bezalel, even though his parents gave him the name. But every name the parents give is God or ordained. I want you to see that he deserves his name. And he understands what a Mishkan is, because you can have the same building, and if you do it with the wrong intention, you have a Migdal Bavel. So you need the architect of the Mishkan to understand what he's doing. So I want you to test him. And I want you to see if he understands. That was the command. Re'ei karasi b'shem. I want you to see it. I want you to test him. And I want you to come out and see that he deserves the name. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? God said, I want you to obviously first make the power parameters, and within that, I will mimic I'll take your lead when you make the Kalim, but you have to do it within the parameters that I made. If not, you're making a name for yourself, then it's not a Mishkan anymore. So Moshe turned it around, and he told Bezalel, let's make these Kalim, and the Mishkan is secondary. Right? We'll make the Kalim, and we'll initiate God's will. Bezalel said, that's not the way the world runs. The world runs that first God makes the what's it called, the parameters, and we bring his presence into this world, and then, within that framework, we're dynamic. Then comes the Kelim. Moshe said, Bezalel Kel Yodata, you understand this Tzeil, this shadow, that true, God mimics us, but it's Tzeil Kel. Kel is Kel Shakai. It's God who creates the limits and the parameters. And you understand that comes first. Therefore, you're fit to build a Mishkan. So Moshe was told, why did he change it? Because he was told to understand why Bezalel deserved his name. And that's why he was called Bezalel. Bezalel Kael.
Where is that Gemara from?
It's in Barachos. Nun Ches, I think. Or Nun He, one of the two. And, okay, it's interesting that that chapter in Tehillim, Yoshe B'Seser Elyo, the Mepharshim say, was said by Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was said when he went up to Shemayim to bring down the Luchos, which is exactly what we're talking about. God is the Elyon, who's up there hidden, but he wants his presence to come into this world. And when he comes into this world, he will take a back seat to our initiation, Bitzel. But it's Bitzel Shakai, as long as it's within the parameters that God gave us. And that's why the word Tzel is in Gematria 120. Tzadik is 90 and Lamed is 30, it's 120. It hints to the 120 days that Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai. And the Mishkan was the continuation of Har Sinai, where Moshe went up to the heavens to bring God's presence down, the antithesis of Migdal Bavel, where they went up to the heavens to keep God's presence out. Mishkan is the continuation of Har Sinai. It's when we brought God's presence down into this world, it devolved into the Mishkan. And that was the continuation of God's presence coming down on Har Sinai through the Torah. You bring God down through parameters and the framework of the Torah. That's what the Mishkan's all about. Somebody on my Moshav, Rafi Shachar, said a very nice addition to this. He pointed out that the Mizbeach, the altar, is not allowed to be built with hewn stones. You have to use stones without human intervention. We don't cut them, right, with metal. They were hewn out with the shamir, which is a miraculously God's creation. The stones had to be whole stones.
What was the shamir?
The shamir was a little creature that emitted some kind of radiation that cracked the stones. But it wasn't cut with metal. On the other hand, the Sanhedrin had to be opposite the Mizbeach. The Sanhedrin was also in the Mikdash, right, the high court, and they had to be opposite the Mizbeach, because that's what we learn from the end of Yisro, speaks about the Mizbeach. The beginning of Mishpatim is the Sanhedrin. So Sanhedrin had to be near the Mizbeach. You know where the Sanhedrin dwelt? What room in the Mikdash? It was called Lishkas HaGozis. The office of the hewn stone. Very interesting. The Sanhedrin had to be in a building that was made out of cut stone, and the Mizbeach wasn't allowed to be made from cut stone, and they were opposite each other. So he said like this, or he said that maybe the Mizbeach represents bringing yourself closer to God, bringing God's influence into your life, sacrificing, right? Getting into God's framework. The framework, you don't have anything to do with. God makes the framework. That's represented by stone. The same stone that the Migdal Bavel people wanted to replace with bricks, man-made bricks that they made. God is represented by the stone, the Luchos HaEven, right? The stone, Mizbeach, is the foundation of getting close to God is on His terms. You are mevatel yourself, you negate yourself to His will instead of creating His will. It all starts by negating yourself to His will and getting within the framework that He made. After that, you have the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin are the foundation of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. The oral law enhances. It builds up. Man now is given the rules, and he can create halacha. And God becomes subordinate to the halacha that man creates. Man says when Rosh Chodesh is, and God goes along with it. The Sanhedrin makes halachas, and God goes along with it. We're the ones. Torah now is in our hands, but within the limits, within the framework that God made. It's not hefker. First you have the Mizbeach that creates the limits and the foundation. Then you can have the Sanhedrin that within those limits and foundation are very dynamic, and they now make the initiation, and God follows the lead. God becomes a shadow again, but it's a shadow within the framework. So that's what this represents. The Mizbeach on the one hand, the Sanhedrin on the other side. The Mizbeach is unhewn stones, and the Sanhedrin is Dafka in the hewn stones. Your dynamism concerning those stones. I wanted to add a little bit more to that. The reason we don't build the Mizbeach with metal implements is because metal is used for weapons, which shorten people's life. And the Mizbeach lengthens people's lives. So thinking, let's take that one step further and have another idea of the Sanhedrin opposite the Mizbeach. God gives the framework of life. And therefore, the Mizbeach is God's parameter of life to human beings. You have a life to use. And we don't want to have anything that represents shortening life in the parameters that God gave us. The Sanhedrin sometimes has to execute people and use those to shorten people's lives. Why? Because they don't live within the framework that God said. And if you don't live within the framework, you forfeit your life. So the Sanhedrin is housed in a place that represents shortening people's lives, whereas the Mizbeach is the parameters of life that God gave. If you want to enjoy the full life that God gave you, then you have to live within those parameters. If you don't, then the Sanhedrin is in the place where they cut stones with metal, and they will let you forfeit your life, and they can shorten your life if you don't deserve, because you don't live within the framework that God gave you, the life to begin with.